Welcome to the new year. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod, where we talk to all the interesting people of the San Luis Valley. In our first episode of 2026, we're joined in our studio on the south side of Alamosa by Luis Murillo, assistant superintendent of the Alamosa School District. We're going to talk to Luis about school cell phone policies. The state of Colorado has a July 1 deadline for schools in Colorado to adopt cell phone policies. Alamosa School District's working on that. Luis is going to talk to us about that. Luis, any New Year's resolutions before we, other than a cell phone policy for Alamosa School District, any resolutions for you in the new year 2026? Good to see you.
Same here, Chris. This place feels like home. This is where we record the Alamosa School District podcast.
Yeah, and we like that podcast, the Alamosa School. And we would encourage people to listen to that. It comes out once a week, and it really is a good in-depth conversation that you have with different members of the school district staff, students, teachers. Yeah. I do more find members. That. I love that podcast.
A few really community members. You know, I feel like we put together a really good archive of what we've done with our district.
And tons of information in that. I mean, if you really want to know about Alamosa School District, what it's doing, what its issues are, what it's confronting, how it's performing, how the student, the podcast gives you all of that. I think that's a very good in-depth school district. I listen to it all the time, and that's where I learn more about Alamosa School District than any place, honestly.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. New Year's resolutions, we are on year 4 of 5 of our community co-created strategic plan, so we're still continue to be very focused on those things, which is generally speaking is, you know, get better academics, continue our growth trajectory, work on school safety, you know, get better at that protocols, how we ensure the safety of our students. I feel really strong about that. I feel really strong about everything. I'm also continuing to work with attraction and retention of staff, family engagement. So just really solid on those goals.
Always a lot on your plate, Luis. Always a lot about, as an assistant school superintendent, you work closely with Diana Jones, the assistant superintendent in Alamosa. But we're also seeing a lot of gains, a lot of progress with the Alamosa School District. That's just an observation from me as I see what's coming out of there. And again, as I listen to your podcast, but other things we do, because we go inside the schools pretty often, and we're seeing teachers of the year, principals of the year, student performance increasing. I mean, if you were just going to judge Alamosa School District by data, not by your perception, by what you think you know, what you might hear, if you're just going by data and results, then I think you're going to give Alamosa School District an A, a passing grade, a B, whatever it is. You're going to say that's a school district that's trending ahead, trending forward and dealing with the myriad of issues you guys got to deal with and still seeing the performance. That's my takeaway looking at your data.
Correct. I would agree with that. And, you know, I'm the first person to say and admit that there's a lot of work to be done. We are headed in the right direction. And I'm also one that, you know, will challenge how the school systems are looked at per the state or even just generally speaking, because there's a lot more that happens in a community than a test, than the data. I'm happy that the state is moving through actually another House bill to having a more comprehensive look schools and communities so that we get rated every year on the accountability system. And in 2027, they will begin looking more in depth at, you know, the big three, which have to do with earning college credit, CTE programs. So just really a more robust look at what a whole community is doing rather than just, you know, English and math, looking at the growth, looking at achievement, looking at dropout rate, looking at retention. So yeah, I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, there's a whole lot there and a whole lot that we could dive into in conversation discussion when it comes to public education and really what you're trying to do with those students as you move them through and get their high school diploma and where do they go from there. That's a whole different conversation. Yeah. I want to bring up the one thing as you were talking about state budgets, state stuff like that, because I know you're reliant and school districts are reliant on state funding through property tax, et cetera.
Yes.
But I was talking to an old friend of ours over the holiday break, our friend Andy Levere, who's the school superintendent for a tiny school district in Weld County, unincorporated Weld County. You know, I was asking him over the holidays how things were going, new job, new superintendent, moved away from Alamosa for, you know, and he said the best thing, that's one of three school districts in the state of Colorado that does not rely on state funding because of the growth they're seeing in that part of Colorado and in Weld County specifically, and with the commercial growth, residential growth, with oil revenue that they get because they're in that county. They don't have to deal with the school, with the state on district funding, on school district funding. In that, I didn't know there were school districts that didn't rely on, and that's one of three, he said. And I was like, wow, it unshackles you, he says.
Yeah, very few, and then mostly up north. I did get a chance to catch up with Andy a little bit at one of the conferences, and that's one of the things he shared, and that he was in a really good situation because of that. Most everyone else, you know, the formula is very complicated, but generally speaking, is they take into account how much we're able to raise locally, and then the state backfills. But then the state has their formulas to tell a community or a school district, this is how much you need to be fully funded. We all argue that we need more to do education. But just generally speaking, you know, we might be a $25 million school district, and let's say that we raise $6 or $6 million locally, then that means that the state will give us the rest.
Right.
And a common misconception is when our taxes go up, then we get to keep all of that. That just means that the state gives us less. So in a case like Andy, you know, he gets to keep all of that because it's been locally raised. And the state might give him less, but he gets to keep what's locally raised.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting formula that Colorado has and that anyone has when it comes to public education. And we're also seeing, and I think you'll have to deal with this, Luis, down the road, and that is how strong of a partner will the federal government be when it comes to public education as we see the collapse of the U.S. Department of Education and those all those functions being moved to other departments within the federal bureaucracy. We're seeing that, right? So you're not going to have a U.S. Department of Education anymore, or at least just in name only, right, not functioning. You see a big shift towards private charters, private education, private tuition, and how public tax dollars are moving there under this administration and not entirely as public education. I have a feeling that you're going to be dealing with more issues in the future as we go forward into 2026, 2027.
And that's an interesting point, because at this point, we just don't know what that's going to be. And that makes it very difficult for planning a budget, for planning programming. Through federal dollars, we get just over $1 million that comes to us in the form of title dollars, which are designated to do different things. And for a budget our size of 25 mil, again, generally speaking, then that $1 million less is a huge hit. And it would change how we do things. We are part of, you know, many different groups, one of them being AASA, which is a National Superintendents Association. And in their meetings, they're really telling school districts and school leaders to get ready for Title II, III, IV, and V to not be funded for the following school year. They're saying that Title I is not on the chopping block yet. But just that uncertainty of not really knowing what your dollars are makes it very difficult to plan for the following school year. So,
yeah, I think that's some of what you're going to have to contend with. But before we get there, you have another policy that you're working on.
That's right.
And that's a cell phone policy that the Colorado legislature is mandating all school districts to adopt a cell phone policy by July 1, 2026. You've been working on what Alamosa School District, how they're going to respond. Give us a little bit. Let's go there first. Let's go there.
Correct. We have this mandate as of House Bill 25-1135, as you mentioned. And what it states is that, as you said, by July 2026, all school boards will adopt a policy that is addressing cell phones. Now, what we've been doing, we're lucky that there's been other school districts that have led the charge when it comes to school policies, school bans. We don't see it as a cell phone ban at all. So there's other things that other school districts have done. where we've started at this point, we haven't brought it to the board because we our board has been changing.
Right. You just filled two vacancies, added Crystal Ray Dominguez and Chris Ivers to that board recently.
That is right. And then Tom Wisniewski was also elected in the November election.
So you're onboarding three new school board members.
Correct. And then they already had their hands full with lots of issues, but the next one that they're going to have to tackle and work collaboratively with the district as well as community is this cell phone policy. So we have been looking at what other school districts have been doing. We have, Dr. Jones and I have a student advisory committee at the high school composed of freshmen through seniors, and it varies sometimes as 10, sometimes as big as 20 students. So we have begun the conversation at least with students. Now, what we foresee happening is something sort of similar to what we did with when we transitioned to a four-day school week, where we put together a committee of folks that was composed of students, teachers, admin, community members, to really look at what the research says, look at what's been done, so that we can collectively bring a recommendation to the school board. We do have a little bit of time, but we're going to get moving on this one. We've sat on it because of the changes of the school board. I will be doing a presentation at the next board meeting, and then quickly after, then sending out invitations for folks who are interested to serve on this committee to bring forward a proposed.
What's the current cell phone guideline, cell phone policy, if there is one, for Alamosa School District now?
Yeah, it lives on our student handbooks. And the guideline is we're trying to protect the educational time in the classroom. We want to keep that integrity. Now, you've been in our schools, you will see that some classrooms will have caddies, some classrooms will have, the shoe things on the wall, so it just varies, and that's part of the problem. Generally speaking, and you could probably attest to this, cell phones are not in the classrooms, but hasn't been fully enforced across the board because there's not a strong policy to back it.
Mm-hmm. When you say cell phone policies aren't in the classroom, I take that to mean students aren't pulling out their cell phones per se during class, but they may have their cell phone on them,
correct,
in their backpack or somewhere in their pocket or something like that.
Yeah, and then the variance there is, there might be some teachers, because right now there's teacher leeway that may allow a student to listen to music, or they may utilize a cell phone as an educational tool, which then, of course, creates a chance for, students to check their Instagram, their Snapchat, which is, part of where the issue lies, not just in Alamosa, but in other school districts across Colorado.
So in your research that you've done so far, and again, I want to go back to July 1, there's a July 1 deadline for school districts in the state of Colorado to adopt a uniform school policy, cell phone policy for their school district. I'm going to assume there's some school districts that have taken this step. Mm-hmm. And when you do your research for Alamosa, Luis, what are you picking up, if you are yet, from those school districts, or what are we seeing, or what are you seeing trend-wise in how school districts are seeing this deadline and are seeing their policy? Are we seeing school districts outright banning cell phones? What are the nuances you've seen so far?
D51, Mesa County Valley School District in Grand Junction is really the leader here. And when the policy came up, superintendent was really speaking, and he was pretty loud about the need for a cell phone policy. They actually have a pretty cool campaign. They call it More Social, Less Media, which was really sticky amongst their community, especially their students. And what we see is not a cell phone ban. There's been cell phone bans through the utilization of yonder pouches in other states, even in some other parts of the state of Colorado. And those haven't really worked. What we see is a real strong sense of enforcement as per the policy. So for example, what D51 does is they allow it in passing periods, during passing periods, and of course lunch, but they're really strict about protecting the instructional time. And it's one of those where we see it, we take it away, and there is no leeway because we are going to protect instructional time. So there's not that leeway of listening to music, or if you're going to use a cell phone as a tool for teaching, then nowadays all students have a device. So the need for a personal cell phone in the classroom is not there. So generally speaking, that's what we're seeing, more on just real strict on enforcement in the classroom with, of course, you know, kids need to get a hold of parents or whatever that might be, passing periods, students can have them, and of course, lunch.
So you don't see, in that case, with District 51, mm-hmm. and then maybe with where you're going to go with Alamosa School District, you don't see or foresee Alamosa School District banning or implementing a ban on cell phones in the school building itself?
I personally don't see it. It'll be an interesting process to see what more students think, parents think. I wouldn't recommend it. A lot of this came from the research behind the book, The Anxious Generation, and what we know about what's happening to the youth, their brains. There's been some other research that's came later on regarding cell phone bans, complete cell phone bans. And really what that research speaks about is when not done correctly, it could create a heightened sense of anxiety for students. Because if you think about it, I mean, you and I have our phones right next to us right now. Mm-hmm. And when the students who have grown with cell phones, when you from day one to day two take it away, there's been some reports of more anxiety. Mm. So what I hear from other colleagues and from our students is we're either all going to do it or nobody's going to do it. Meaning, and what the students will say is, I'm okay, because not surprisingly, students recognize that cell phones could be a problem for their learning. Students will tell you this. Our students have told us that. Mm-hmm. But also, their social life is very important. So what they'll say is, if my Snapchat streak is not growing during the day, I don't want my friend's streak to be growing during the day. We all have to be on the same page. Mm. Otherwise, I'm going to get fear of missing out. Or FOMO. As they say, FOMO. Yeah,
FOMO, right.
So really, that's some of the feedback that we've gotten from our own students, as well as some of the feedback that other superintendents talk about. Students know they want to do something about it. They need help from adults, but we all got to be on the same page.
Interesting. It's always, and we've done it. We've gone into or take a middle mm-hmm. school. We've gone into the high schools. We've gone into the elementary schools, Alamosa Citizen, to talk to students just to learn from them about what they're experiencing around a variety of topics. And you get really, I think, honest answers when you talk to students. And I think that's probably maybe one of the biggest benefits of this process is at least the school district, the administration, et cetera, are going to hear directly from students on what they want when it comes to a cell phone policy.
Yeah. The other things that we've heard have come up, of course, have to do with safety and security. You know, what happens in case of, right? And really, I think that as we continue to gain more credibility on what we've done, our response is going to be, in case of an emergency, we need our students with us. We need them to listen to our directives. We need them to be in the room and not on their cell phones. We have protocols in place. We have ways to communicate with parents. You know, we have ways to communicate with emergency services. So in that case, you know, we want students to be with us, and we want our community and our parents to trust that we're going to get communication out as soon as possible. But I am ready, and I know that's going to be one of the hot topics of discussion, and just willing and very ready to listen to parents, students, and come up with other suggestions.
How does this roll out for you moving forward? Because, again, you have that July 1 deadline. We're here in January, first week of January. How does this roll forward for you to get to a recommendation mm-hmm. for the school board itself?
Yeah. Since we're working on a tighter time crunch, and then I don't see this as being as big as moving the school district from a 5-day to a 4-day school week. What I foresee is as soon as the presentation to the board happens, then an invitation for folks to want to be part of a committee. I foresee us meeting 4 or 5 times in the evening to, again, just take a look at the research, take a look at what the bill says, what House bill says, what we're being asked to do, and then engage in conversations, pros and cons, those things that I've been talking about, to then take another policy as base and adopt it to Alamosa School District. Just like when we moved from a 5 to a 4, we did not recreate the wheel. We took what other districts have been done and we looked at it through the lens of Alamosa community. That's how I foresee this process happening to get to a recommendation to the board. In our process, it takes 2 readings for the board to adopt a policy. To get to a recommendation, first recommendation sometime in May to be adopted in June.
Have you seen any school districts, because of this legislation and the deadline of July 1, have you seen any school districts in the state of Colorado that are implementing full bans of cell phones in schools? And I ask that because we know there are school districts around the country that are doing that, that have taken that step of eliminating the cell phone entirely from the school building. Yeah. Anything like that you've seen yet in Colorado?
I have. There's been just conversation about the full-on bans utilizing the Yonder pouches. Honestly, I haven't looked too much into those because as a district leader, that is not something that I would recommend. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you just Google and you get online, you see all these students finding ways to break the pouches. I'm a believer that we have the staff that could be strict, get everyone on the same page, and we can communicate enough with our students and parents so that we can come up with something that makes sense, that avoids, you know, a ban.
Interesting. Hey, we're going to be right back. We're talking to Luis Murillo. He's the assistant school superintendent for Alamosa School District. This is the Valley Pod. We're going to take a quick break.
The Southern Rocky Mountain Ag Conference is February 3rd through the 5th in Monta Vista at the spacious, comfortable, and professional Sky High Conference and Event Center. The theme, Managing the Chaos, Harnessing Complexity, Planting Hope, hits at the heart of what ag producers are facing these days in the San Luis Valley. The educational programs will feature a record 50 sessions, including talks, panels, and demonstrations. Register by contacting the SLV Area Extension Office at 719-852-7381. That's 719-852-7381 to register. The Southern Rocky Mountain Ag Conference. Managing the chaos, harnessing complexity, planting hope.
Hey, we're back. We're talking to Luis Murillo. He's the assistant school superintendent for the Alamosa School District. Luis, how long have you been in Alamosa School District as the assistant superintendent? I want to go back 4 or 5 years to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is my 5th year leading with Dr. Jones as assistant superintendent.
What has been, in your experience of those period of years, you've dealt with, you've done a lot in that strategic plan. You've changed, you and Superintendent Jones, the school district, there's a lot of moves you guys have made.
Yeah.
What has been for you maybe your biggest takeaway performing this type of job, because you're a veteran educator, you've been in the classroom, you've been in different positions as a school, as an educator itself. What's your biggest takeaway so far being in the glass house, if you will, in the big office with the superintendent?
Yeah. Well, you know, as part of my life story, being an immigrant to this country and having, you know, the chance to be a recipient of a great public education, I lead with the chip on my shoulder by choosing to live and lead in rural. And what I mean by that is I see excellence in our classrooms. I see excellence in our staff. I see excellence in our community. I mean, just the interviews that people that wanted to apply for the board, there's excellence everywhere. And often, you know, when you think about rural, we see a deficit mindset. They're all the way down in almost 4 hours away from Denver. And some of the things are real when it comes to funding and access that our kids might have or not have access to, as opposed to other kids. But I lead with the conviction that our students can, and that's been proven. It's been proven over and over that our students can get a great education in the Alamosa School District and go and do great things, go to big universities and come back or serve our community or serve another community. So my biggest takeaway is that we have the grit, we have the excellence, and we have the people to continue to make the Alamosa School District and the community of Alamosa an even better place.
Yeah, you know, and you know my daughter, we moved back to Alamosa 10 years or so ago. My daughter was in the third grade, fourth grade when we moved back. So she went through Alamosa Elementary, Alamosa Ortega Middle School, Alamosa High School. She's currently a sophomore at the University of Oregon in Eugene in an architecture program. And I just take away from that experience and her experience, and I would agree with what you just said about the excellence that does exist in Alamosa, in the school districts. I'm in the school buildings a lot, as you know, and I do really think that you guys and your school as a whole is doing a really good job there, is doing as good a job as we can hope for public education here in the Valley. I want to ask you about one more thing before we let you go, because always a lot of conversations these days about artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that even more, right, with large learning language models now that we're seeing out there. And I wonder where Alamosa School District is taking this when it comes to AI technology in the classroom, because I know you're using it. I've been in the schools. I've seen the teachers using it.
Yeah.
Give us some sense of that technology and its usage within the school building itself.
Yeah, we are using it. I use it. I mean, who doesn't use it? About 3 years ago, when the talk about AI really started growing, when the talk about AI specifically for school systems to improve the teacher's day-to-day operations, but also to improve the learning on the student end, really started coming on strong is when we started our journey of learning. So we host the SLV Educators Conference. In fact, we have one coming up next Friday. And every time we had had one of those conferences, we had had either a major speaker, we had a keynote. One time, the first time that we started talking about AI to introduce it to us, and or different breakout sessions that are a continuation of what AI tools can help our staff and our students get deeper. Part of the conversations early on in the state were, how do we put parameters? So there's been some districts that have adopted policies to put some parameters. At this time, we haven't, because it's changing so fast that we don't even know what parameters those would be. So we really welcome, we encourage our staff and our students to utilize AI, and our teachers will be the first one to give you feedback on how it's changing how we do education. So at this point, you know, we bring it as professional development for our staff to explore and implement, and we're still very much alongside learning with them and with other school districts on what the potential of AI is in education.
Yeah, there's a whole lot there, isn't there, about how quickly the technology is advancing, how we're moving forward with technology, and how schools, students are using it as a tool to learn, as a tool to teach. I mean, it's just fascinating this period of time we're in. And you really have to be nimble as an educator, I would think.
Yeah, and I have a funny story about that, because I remember, I'm a learner myself, of course. I popped into one of the breakout sessions when we brought in a speaker. And this was earlier on. This was maybe two years ago. And one of the questions was, because AI has been really pushed upon educators to take a load off, right? It can help you grade. It can help you develop proficiency scales, rubrics, all the things. And the question was, and it came from an educator, and I thought it was very clever to ask, well, if a teacher is using AI to create an assignment and to grade an assignment, and potentially a student could be using AI to help write this assignment, then it's just machines talking to machines. And how do we ensure that we don't lose that connection between a student and a staff? And that's really been the challenge of adopting and using AI. I have a story of, you know, a teacher who was just very open with her kids. And she says, this is the assignment. I want to let you know that I'm using AI to give you feedback, but I, as an educator, will also give you feedback and will compare with AI. The difference here is by using AI, you can get feedback instantly, or you can wait 4 or 5 days for my feedback because I have a weekend and I have a family and, you know, I'm a wife. And what was interesting is she was challenged. A student said, I think this is lazy. I think you as a teacher should give us feedback. And what the teacher said, let's try this. Let's see what AI gives you as feedback. And then I'm going to give you my feedback and let's compare. So it's just those stories of navigating together to see how we best utilize AI and continue to keep, of course, the human component to continue to push the education forward.
Yeah, it's really interesting what's happening in education around public education across the country here in Alamos in the San Luis Valley. We've been talking to Luis Murillo, the assistant school superintendent for the Alamosa School District. Before we let you go from this episode, as we want to start a new year on 2026, the Valley Pod, and we look ahead to the rest of the year, we want to stop for a minute and ask for your financial support. We rely on paid individual memberships to AlamosaCitizen.com or individual donations to pay the salaries of the staff that produce Alamosa Citizen on a daily basis. You can become a member or give a financial contribution by going to AlamosaCitizen.com and hit the link, Become a Member. There you can sign up for an annual membership of $100, $8.33 a month, or 28 cents a day. Or you can go to AlamosaCitizen.com and give anything that you can. We are 100% funded by what we bring in. Welcome to 2026. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod. We'll see you around the Valley.